Sled Dog Podcast, Episode 11, Interview with Polly Mahoney. Hi, this is Tim.
And this is Gina. And this is the podcast that guides you, helps you grow, and gives you information about the sport of dog sledding.
Jeez.
Yes. Why guides you. Guides you.
I completely
You know, I try
that.
And get really creative and you don't get it.
No, I just
get it.
I'm not oh nice. Keep it up. Hey, well, welcome everybody to the Sled Dog Podcast. Today we've got a really neat interview. It was actually spurred on by a couple of our listeners. We've had quite a few listeners requesting from us. They found the Sled Dog Podcast and they've listened and they just think it's fantastic, but a lot of them don't have these big kennels, and yet they still want to go out on some kind of a dog sledding adventure. Some of them live in, strange places. The one gentleman,
well,
that's
actually,
strange,
yep.
I guess.
Yep, but, actually, we'll put a shout-out. Thanks, Verl. Verl Jones from California was the one who wanted to have a podcast on someone that did guiding.
Yeah, so we thought, well, why not? We have never talked to somebody in the guide service area, so we sought them out. And we found somebody that was actually interviewed a couple of times in Mushing Magazine and has had a great reputation for about the last 18 years or so of just providing top-quality guide services. And so we thought, you know what, why not? Let's open up our eyes a little bit to the folks that are not only having a great time in dog sledding, not just racing, but also being able to provide themselves with a living and a whole lot of fun and exciting times for the people that get to go on the trips. And I like to call them adventures because I tell you know, going on a 3 or 5 day trip for me, that would be an adventure. I don't know. I just can't fathom even spending a couple of nights outside in a no-floor cloth tent, but it's got to be exciting. And so
we reached out to Polly Mahoney, and so we're going to start this kind of like a series, though they're not going to be right in a row. But we started on the East Coast, and Polly Mahoney has a guide service out of Maine called
Mahoosic Guide Service. So it's been around for about 18 years or so, and you'll hear all about it. But I think it was really neat. Her and her partner are doing a great job up there in Maine, and they tell some interesting stories and also some experiences that they've had, and also tell about the guide service. And you know, I think it's a great opportunity. I thought to myself, all of us have friends and family members that, you know, they look at us a little bit cockeyed sometimes when we say, yeah, we've got 20 dogs and or 25 dogs or 50 dogs, depending on who you are, and that you're into dog sledding. And I thought, you know what? What a great opportunity is if you could ever take these folks or give them a gift card, per se, or gift certificate to one of these guide services and let them go out for a full day and just have a ball. You know, it's like going skiing for the day, but even better. You know, we thought of it as a mixed kind of idea, not only to share the knowledge of what some of the guide services do, but also that there's probably a lot of other folks that might think about getting into the guide services. If you got a kennel and you've got some great dogs and you love to help other folks and you love to give people experiences outside of your family and friends, so if you like people, it might be something you want to get into. I don't think any of us are going to be in competition with each other. I think as we drive the sport more and get people to involve ourselves more in the sport, it's just good for everybody. What's that old saying about McDonald's and Burger King? That McDonald's really wasn't very popular until Burger King came in and put a store right next to it. So it was just because they drove the idea that more and more people were doing it and it got popular. So, you know, maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, but it's definitely something to think about.
Yeah, and we also just wanted to warn you. Polly was actually in a movie, and does talk a little bit about that. So Tim decided to rent the movie to see it, and when I saw it...
You realized that you'd seen it before.
I realized that I'd seen it before, and I said, Tim, don't you remember we watched this movie? This is when the guy eats mice.
Yeah, I had never seen this. She did. But it's a really neat movie. It's called Never Cry Wolf. A lot of you might have seen it. It's done probably, 20 years ago or so. And
yeah.
She was. She tells the whole story about what her participation in was with it. And she's actually got a little cameo spot in it. The backside, anyways, of her going off on a sled.
Yeah.
But it's pretty neat. The guy's eating mice throughout the movie.
He's basically in the Arctic Circle, and when it comes down to it, he's hungry.
He's eating
and he
mice.
Begins to eat mice. And it's just the funny thing that he does and how he does eat mice. So,
pretty
anyway,
funny.
Tim thought, one thing, like, oh, that's not such a big deal.
So it was pretty funny that they're eating mice all the way through the movie. But enough said on that.
You're not going to tell him about the tail hanging out of his mouth?
Oh, it's quiet. You're going to take all the good stuff away.
Because that was really gross.
Was it the tail or the foot that you liked?
We'll leave that alone. One time it was a foot and the other time it was a sand tail.
Anyway, it was
a nice movie, though.
Yes. It was very interesting to see the dynamics of the wolf and the caribou and how they were feeding off each other. I don't know about the politics, and to be honest, I have no idea on the migration patterns of the caribou and if it's changed over the time and so on.
Right.
But the movie was pretty interesting other than that. So, good stuff.
Enough said about that. We're not here to talk about movies, right?
Yeah. Here at
we
the
do
movie
need
review.
To get to our mailbox.
Yes. We got to say thank you to a lot of folks today.
A lot of people reach out to us from Michigan, which is cool, and thank you for all those that have been responding. We've been, I think, complaining. So we definitely got our answers. We got Matt from Lowell. He skeegers with his pointer husky cross.
So hi, Matt. Thank you so much for dropping us a line.
And also Russ and Sally from Michigan, as well as the Hurd family, who are close friends of ours, Chris and Mike Hurd, with their sons Sean and Ian.
Hi, guys.
They both left messages regarding our Shoney story. Had one of our Siberian Huskies that we had to put down recently, and the Shoney story was tribute to Caleb. And so those of us that have had dogs that have passed away or we've had to put down, that kind of touched on a few people. So,
and they let us know that they were able to listen to it, and it was kind of neat. So it's nice to have not only family, but also friends and people in the area let us know.
Okay, and last is a shout-out to Jenny Callahan, and I believe she's from Alaska.
So, hi, Jenny. Thank you so much. And hope
she left us a tip as well.
We'll
begin working on those tips. One we are able to do really quick, and sometimes it'll take a little while for other ones. But do send us your ideas. We love them. They really help steer us.
You know, being a not-for-profit agency, a non-profit organization here, we're not really guided by anything more than just what you guys ask us to look for. So we're having a ball. The folks giving us direction on, oh, talk to this musher, talk to that musher. We've got a bunch lined up that we're going to be interviewing this week.
Yep. Real good one coming up.
I know, we're excited. Hopefully everything goes well.
We're not going to tell you.
Not yet, but tune in next week. And so after Polly's, you'll hear someone else. Actually, we'll have another Shoney, and then we'll go to that one. And also, we want to make a shout-out to one of our biggest fans.
Well, our biggest Shoney fan.
Our biggest Shoney fan. He's a man before his time. He's seen the vision before we are even. So he's getting us into t-shirts and all kinds of fun stuff. We want to say hi to Kelvin Eggert from Ohio. And so thank you, Kelvin and David. And thank you, David, for letting Kelvin listen to him. So hi, buddy.
He listens to Shoney right before bed every night. And
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Are we putting him to sleep?
I don't know.
Maybe we're just calming him down. I don't know.
But regardless, he likes our Shoney stories, and that just blesses us. So we're really happy about that. He was wondering when Shoney was going to tell the story about the Iditarod, and it's coming. One more, and then after that. So it's
and
in
also,
process.
Also, a big thank you to Dr. Tim, because Dr. Tim gave us some more interviews. And so we want to say thank you so much. If you get a chance, please go out and check out his food. Just fantastic stuff. DrTim's.com. So don't forget, at the end of this interview, we're also going to have a tip from Dr. Tim.
Also, we wanted to thank everyone that has been using our site to get to Amazon.com. It has been paying off. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been, you know, it kind of, we kind of, I, okay, I'll not we, me, I'm the technical guy on this crew here. I dropped
kind of technical.
True.
You call me complex all the time.
No, you buy a lot better than I do. But I didn't realize that so many people have been going out there. So it's just been fantastic. And matter of fact, I think we're going to start a new segment of the unusual purchases of the week on the Amazon link. It's something that some buddy of mine do on another podcast, and it's just really neat. So, but we've had people buy cameras now and some books and some more books. And so it's a great place to get books on dogs and books on mushing and books on everything. So,
and Christmas presents.
And Christmas presents. So I don't know if this is in timing or not. But for all you men that are listening, we know you haven't purchased anything yet for your spouse. So please go through the Amazon link on SledDogPodcast.com. Is that pretty
bad? Would that be like you too?
That would be me too. So I wonder if I can use the link. I got to try that. No, I can't, but everybody else can. Yeah, they get you. Anyways, so thank you so much. And here comes the interview from Polly. Well, thank you, Polly, for joining us. And Polly, why don't you tell us a little bit about Mahoosick Guide Service?
Okay. Well, we are in western Maine, and we've been in business. This will be our 18th winter. and we guide, my partner Kevin Slater and I guide dog sledding trips in the winter and canoeing in the summer. And the shortest thing that we offer is a day trip, which we offer usually midweek, and then we do overnight trips every weekend. They vary in length from 2 days to 5 days in Maine. And then in the early winter in December, in the late winter, late March, early April, we do trips up north in Quebec, and we work with Cree Indians and Inuit, so they're a cross-cultural experience as well. We go out, we take our own dogs when we go up to, in December, to Ujibugamu, Quebec, and we work with a Cree couple up there. And then in the spring, when we go up to Kujawak, which is on Ungava Bay, we work with an Inuit man with his dogs, because to go up there, you need to fly, and we didn't want to get into flying our dogs.
Right.
So we do that. Those are more like 10 or 11-day trips. There, we supply all the food and gear. We have boots and parkas and sleeping bags and all that specialized winter gear.
Well, I've got about 14 questions to ask you just on what you just gave me already. That's wonderful.
Okay.
So let's take a step back. So 18 years you guys have been around, so it's not like you just started this a couple of years ago.
Right. Yep. Well, that's how long the business has been in operation. I've been dog sledding for 28 years because I started when I was living up north, and my partner, Kevin, has been mushing longer as well, and we both met working for the Outward Bound School in Newry. So besides the dog sledding, we both have a lot of experience just guiding other kinds of trips in general.
So when you said you lived up north, where is up north from Maine?
Well, I went up to Alaska when I was 20, and then I ended up in northern British Columbia around Atlin, B.C. for a few years, and then in the southern Yukon Territory around Haines Junction. So I was in that area for all of my 20s. So for about 10 years, I lived, you know, in different places and little cabins in the bush and here and there. And then when I was 30, I ended up leaving the Yukon to come back to the lower 48.
Wow, that is fantastic. What got you into all this? I mean, how did you decide to head up there?
Well, I've always loved outdoor adventure, and, you know, I had a pretty active outdoor life growing up. I don't know, when I graduated from high school, I headed west, and then when I was out west in Wyoming, California, that area, people were talking about Alaska, so then I decided to head up there, and then I met my ex-husband in Alaska, or actually in northern BC, and he had sled dogs, so it was really easy to get into mushing through him, and so that's how I started.
So there wasn't this 25-30-year plan ago that you said, I'm going to do all these different things and end up in Maine and be part of a guide service?
Not really. I mean, I always knew I'd want to work with people, and I like to be in the outdoors, so it was like an easy fit. But I didn't really have the dream to have my own guide service until I was around 25, 26. Then that's when I decided that's what I wanted to do. So we kind of started it in the Yukon, but we were so remote and hard to get hold of. It didn't really, you know, take off. But when Kevin and I met each other, we had the same dream, and so then it was easy to make it happen.
Oh, that is wonderful. Now, what does Mahusek mean?
Mahusek means land that is hard to hunt in, and we live right in the Mahusek Mountains, which, you know, there's a lot of mountains right surrounding our house, and it's Native American word that means land that is hard to hunt in.
Oh, that is interesting. Now, I'm going to take a step back. You had mentioned a bunch of different things. You've got, I guess you've got day trips, and you've got weekend trips, and you've got longer weekends or 3 days or 4 days. Tell us about those.
Okay. Well, the day trips start at 9 in the morning and end at 4 in the afternoon. And we actually don't mush right from our home because we're in the mountains, and it would be too dangerous to be having people that have never mushed before going right up these mountain trails. So we end up needing to truck the dogs to where we do our day trips, which is usually about a half-hour drive. So by the time we meet everybody and make sure they're dressed warm enough, because we have boots and parkas that they can borrow if they need to, and we meet the dogs, load them in the truck, and drive up to our starting point, And then we have a lesson about dog sledding, because some of the participants are driving a team without a guide on the sled. And we have six dog teams, so we may have up to six teams out at one time. And we do a lesson there, and then we mush. It's not a long distance. It's probably an hour to an hour and a half. And then we stop, and we make a campfire, and we serve hot lunch out on the trail, you know, heat up soup over a campfire. And the dogs have a chance to rest, and people take pictures and pat the dogs. Our dogs are very friendly, people-oriented. And then after lunch, we hook up and head back. Sometimes it's the same trail. Sometimes it's a loop. We prefer to do a loop, but it depends on the trail conditions. And then we're back here, and people are ready to go home by like 4 in the afternoon.
And are they mentally ready at that point, too? Are they pretty exhausted?
Well, it all depends. You know, like we're kind of like the mailman. We're out in all kinds of weather. And it really depends on the day and the people. Like, you know, even if it's raining or sleeting, we go out, or snowstorms. And in those conditions, people are ready to go home sooner than if it's a beautiful blue sky day. And then people are wanting more. So, it, you know, it's definitely like a good introduction. It's and a lot of times people do a day trip and realize that was just a taster, and then they want to come back for more and do an overnight or a 5-day trip.
Well, tell me about those. I mean, that is riveting to me. I was looking at your website, which is a beautiful website, by the way. Okay. And I'm probably going to bug you about Jimmy, the dog of the month. I love how you guys do that on your site.
Oh, right.
And I'm just thinking to myself, okay, you've got these people that they're probably coming. Are they coming from all over the United States, or usually the East Coast?
Well, we get people from all over the country, and even people from Europe sometimes. I'd say the majority are from New England, but we do get people flying in. The closest airport to us is Portland, Maine, which is a 2-hour drive away, but, you know, it's pretty good roads up to where we live. We're not way off on back dirt roads, so it's pretty easy to get to.
So people probably come in maybe a day early sometimes, and they'll hang out in Portland or do something else?
Yeah, well, actually, they usually, if they come in early, we have accommodations right here on the property that people can stay in. We have a farmhouse that we run as a little bed and breakfast. There's 2 rooms that we rent out to clients. And then we also have a new timber frame lodge that we have a couple rooms with bunk beds. So we have accommodations here. And we generally, if people aren't in the area, we do recommend they come in the night before. And there's also a downhill ski area right 20 minutes away. So sometimes people are coming up to go skiing, and they tack on a day of dog sledding, you know, with that.
Now, do you find yourself doing more of the overnights and or the 5 days than you do the 1 day or the just the day trips, or is it about equal?
Well, it used to be about equal, but now we're doing more overnight trips, and I think the only reason is because there's so many other people offering day trips now. We used to be like just about the only ones doing it, and now there's many people offering rides and day trips and half-day trips. So we aren't doing as many now as we used to, but we still are very busy with the overnight trips, and we actually really prefer those just because it's such a, you know, more of a experience. It's not only the dog sledding, but you get the winter camping, and some of them have cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. So I just really like introducing people to the natural world and having them be out, you know, overnight and camping with the dogs. And there's just so much to it that so I like doing the overnight.
Well, and that's perfect, because I want to ask you about 8 questions regarding that.
Oh, okay.
So you get these folks, and they come from all over, and they head out. Are they, first of all, I thought to myself, do they overpack or underpack usually for the overnights?
Well, we provide when people sign up for a trip, we send them a really detailed clothing list of what we recommend. So they pretty much go right down the list and have just what we recommend. And if, you know, once in a while, there's people that forget this or that, and we have quite a supply of things that we can lend out from our lost and found box and, you know, things we've gathered over the years. But people come, you know, pretty well prepared clothing-wise.
Good.
We always, before the overnight trips, we have a organizational outfitting meeting the night before, like at 7 o'clock. So at that time, we go through people, make sure they have what we've recommended, and get them size for boots and parkas and sleeping bags and duffel bags and all of that. So when they come the next morning, they're all dressed and packed and ready for the trail, so that we don't waste daylight hours getting people organized.
Oh, that's a great idea. Now, how many people usually go out on the overnights or the 5 days?
Well, the most that we take would be 10 participants plus 3 guides. So that's kind of our maximum group size. Sometimes, and the minimum would be 4, but I would say on average our group sizes are 8 plus 3 guides.
That's wonderful.
And on trips of that size, some of the weekend trips are a combination of dog sledding and cross-country skiing. So like half of the group is mushing and half of the group is skiing, you know, at the same time. And obviously we travel at different paces, so we aren't like right together all the time on the trail, but we like start together and usually, and then we camp together and we pass each other, like the skiers are having lunch and the mushers pass them on the trail.
Oh, wow. Tell me about the terrain. Is it, you know, I think of Maine and I think of probably what you summed up earlier, just the mountains and so forth. But, you know, is it all mountains? Is it lakes, or what's it like there?
Well, we're in the mountains, and we do a lot of traveling on a lake because it's much easier for the dogs pulling and for us and for everybody, as long as we stay away from the snowmobilers. So our trails often go right along the shoreline of the lake, and we see a lot of animal tracks, and we can stay off from the main snowmobile trails. So that's where we prefer to go, and then people just have really beautiful views of the mountains around the lake. But we do have some trails in the woods that we've made ourselves, and we don't get snowmobile traffic on it. And it's where we go with the dogs, it's fairly gentle. There's a few little hills, but it's pretty gentle. It goes along beside a river and across some bogs. And, you know, Maine is very wooded, so if you go through the woods, you have to have a trail. You can't just, like, bushwhack.
Yeah, I can't imagine that.
And then we have, like, a cabin-to-cabin trip that we do up in northern Maine, and that's some trail, but a lot of the trail are on, like, logging roads. You know, there, again, we get some beautiful views of Mount Katahdin, like the highest mountain in Maine. But it's that trip that there's more hills, so people have to be in good enough shape to run up some of the hills behind the dogs. But it's nice for us and for our clientele to offer some different trips. So we like to go up there once or twice a year.
You know, I was going to ask you about that. Are the adventures right for everybody? I mean, is it, obviously it's not. Not everybody can go on them, but what's the kind of the profile of the person that comes on your trips?
Well, we get quite a range of ages and abilities. I think people that are on day trips some of them may not want to do an overnight, so you may tend to get people that are, you know, not as adventurous and maybe not in as good a shape, but, I mean, that's just generally speaking. I'd say the common denominator with our clients are they like dogs and they like being out in the winter. So, I mean, if those are two really important things, and if you like dogs and being out, then it's a pretty good chance you're going to have a good time. I mean, most everybody has a good time on our trip.
So what's the camping like? Is it, obviously, it can be cold, but you've got, I see you've got the floorless tents, and they're sleeping on, is it hammocks or pine balls, or what is it?
Yeah, well, we use canvas wall tents, a traditional style tent, and we have a wood stove in each tent, and then there's fir boughs down on the floor, and then for sleeping, we put down Therm-a-Rest or Ensolite pads on top of the boughs, and we have a number of different camps set up in various places in this area, but in each camp, there's usually 3 tents, so one of them is bigger for everyone gathers in for eating and cooking and socializing. And then when we get ready to go to bed at night, then, you know, some people sleep in the cook tent, but then there's other ones that people sleep in. And so it's like a community. The dogs are staked right outside of the tent, and we have people participate in, you know, whatever, you always leave the camp how you found it, so people help cut firewood to resupply whatever we burned during their trip. And then you always leave fresh boughs down on the floor, because as people are walking in and out, the boughs don't look as fresh as when we arrived. So we always leave the camp looking really nice. And then we also have to chop a hole through the ice to get water, and we have people help with that. So the trips are pretty participatory, and I think it really makes the trip, the experience richer if people help out, and plus they stay warmer.
Oh, I can imagine. That's probably the added benefit. Yeah. How about children? Is there sometimes do the younger adults come and so forth?
Well, our minimum age for a day trip for children is 4, and the minimum age for an overnight is 6. And I guess the oldest person we've had out on a day trip is like 84.
Wow.
And on a overnight would be 81.
Holy cow.
We have a couple from Scotland that have been coming with us every year for like 16 years, and they came last winter, and they're 80 and 81 now. And, you know, they drive a team by themselves, and they did our 5-day cabin-to-cabin trip, and they're very adventurous.
Oh, that is exciting. What a wonderful annual event to do.
Yeah, they're great role models. If I could be like that at their age, I would.
You will be. Well, hey, do you have any funny stories at all, or anything that ever goes, I don't want to say goes wrong, but anything really interesting that happens? There's got to be all kinds of funny little things that happen.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think of some stories. I think over the years I've had so many dogs, and we have family line of dogs. I call them Yukon Huskies because the lineage originated up in the Yukon, but I've introduced some new blood along the way, but it's definitely a family line. And there's certain dogs over the years that you really get a great relationship with. And I like it when you get such a relationship with them that they read your mind and you don't have to actually even talk to them. So there's one lead dog I had, his name was Lonnie, and he would always, I used him for 10 years when I first started guiding. He was always had tons of energy, raring to go all the time. He was so tuned into me, like at night, if I'm laying in bed, you know, out camping, and I would be like, oh, I have to go, you know, I would just wake up and think, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. Oh, I don't want to. It's so cold out. I think I'll wait. And then he would start howling. And I'm like, all right, I'll get up and go. So he was just like that all the time. And in the morning, you know, it's chilly and you don't want to get out of your bag and you're wondering, is it daylight yet? And so, you know, I'd just be laying there with my eyes shut and I'd just open one eye to see if it's light and he'd start howling right away. I mean, that's just so, he was so tuned in to me.
That is funny. Yeah. Oh, well, and so, I mean, have you gotten, you probably got stuck in blizzards. You probably have had beautiful weather, probably had melt-offs. I mean, all of the above, probably.
Yes. I had another dog, Hermes, that was really, he was born and raised in the bush up in the Yukon, and he was a real great bush dog. And I remember mushing on a lake here in Maine one time, and he was leading me, and he kept wanting to go to shore, and I kept, you know, saying ha to stay out, and he kept wanting to go G and go to shore. And, you know, I did that like 3 times in a row, and then finally I thought, he's being pretty stubborn about this. I guess I better listen. And then I went up around a corner, and there just out of the blue with no sign was a open spring hole, you know, and he had sensed that. And so he was just a great dog for, you know, just keeping you safe sort of thing out in the bush and out in the woods.
You know, and you can't train that, can you? I mean, that is something that's just inherent in them.
Yeah, and he was amazing. And he would, you know, he's kind of like a horse always wants to go back to the barn.
Right.
And Hermes was always like that. You know, he would take you home in a blizzard or, you know, he always wanted to go home. Lonnie, on the other hand, never wanted to go home. So he would never take you back. In fact, I was in a whiteout on the lake once, and he actually took me around an island a couple times before I realized, he is not going to take me home. I guess I got to get my map and compass out and really direct him, because he'd just soon keep mushing around and around just so he wouldn't have to go back home.
Oh, that is so funny. I'm sitting here laughing. I could just see you like three times around going, yeah, Spanish in there. Is there another dog sled out here? It must be. What? How big are the dog sled teams that you guys run? Is it 4, 6 dog, 8 dog?
We usually run 5, and our dogs are a little bigger than a lot of people that are using dogs for racing. I'd say the females are anywhere from 55 to 70 pounds, and the males are 60 to 90 pounds. So 5 dogs is a pretty strong team. And, you know, we do go out in all different conditions. Sometimes we're mushing even on glare ice on the lake, and then we would only use like 4 dogs, but on average it's 5.
Oh, that's wonderful. I mean, and I'm sure you've got to have, because are you packing a lot of things in the sleds too? They're the people's clothing and different things?
Yes, we've got, yep, big loads on the sled, people's clothes and food and gear. And we've actually, over the last few years, we've started doing a little bit more snowmobile support than we ever used to, just to help the dogs and for that little extra buffer of safety. I mean, the snowmobile's not right there with the dogs, but it's kind of around, and it just helps lighten the loads.
Well, and I notice you also have a women's trip or women's trips. Is that for dog sledding, or is that in the summertime?
Well, I do that both in the summer and winter, and I just do that because I find, you know, when you have a group of people, you often end up with the men do certain chores and the women do others. Like, prime example are the men are out sawing wood and the women are in the tent doing the dishes. When you do a woman's trip, everybody does everything. And sometimes women are intimidated to try something new in the company of men. And, not, I mean, not always, but sometimes. And so it's just nice to have everybody do everything, and then sometimes people feel an empowerment that they're trying something new and, you know, a better self of confidence, and I just like seeing that happen on our trips.
Oh, that is wonderful. It's a great idea. I mean, you know, I started thinking about that. Maybe we should have a men's trip for them to cook and do other things too.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I'm sure they could throw a piece of caribou on the grill, yeah. But that's about it. Now, yeah. How about animal life? Do you guys see a lot of moose or other things up there?
Yeah, we have a lot of wildlife around. When we're mushing, we don't really see that much, but the skiers see more than we do, and they see a lot of tracks. When we're mushing, you're so focused on the dogs and, you know, watching for tangles and hanging on and all that people miss some scenery and some of the tracks. But when you're skiing, you tend to see a lot more. But we have a lot of coyotes in our area as well, and they come around, not right into camp, but they come and howl from, you know, and talk back and forth to our dogs. So that's always neat at night. You know, I always tell people, if you hear the dogs howling in the middle of the night, and they'll be like, you know, 30 dogs howling, and then they just stop, like there's a conductor out there, and they just stop all at once. And then if you listen, usually you hear coyotes off in the distance, and that's what's got them howling.
Oh, so, that is interesting.
Then we have lots of deer and moose and fox and marten and, you know, black bear in the summer. And so there are a lot of wildlife here.
And you guys, you guide all year round. How many trips are, you know, I guess because they're all kinds of mixed, but in the wintertime, I was looking at your website, you've got a lot of different dates planned.
Yeah, we do. We're kind of like farmers. We have to make hay while the sun shines, so we're really busy in the winter to make enough to survive the rest of the year. And, well, I don't really count our trips too often, but a couple of years ago, someone interviewed us, and I did count the trips for her, including overnights and day trips. We had 50 trips in one winter.
Wow.
Which is quite a lot.
And that's trips, so that's probably even more days. It's probably close to probably 100 days or so, probably.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. But my partner, Kevin, and I guide separate a lot. We're not always together, so we may have 2 trips happening at the same time. Same days, or sometimes they're staggered by 1 or 2 days.
Then that's wonderful. And I noticed on your website, it says that you obviously are certified in the medical emergency training and the wilderness first responder and so forth. But there was one thing on your webpage that I got to tell you, I never heard of it. And I immediately went out. I got a subscription to Netflix for Christmas early this year, of course. And I went out. Tell me about Never Cry Wolf, the movie. Oh, Never Cry Wolf. What was that all about?
Yeah, that's a great movie. Well, back when I first started mushing, when I was like 21, my ex-husband was in another movie, which wasn't mentioned. It's called Death Hunt. And that movie was Charles Bronson. It's about the Mad Trapper of Rat River, which was a true story about a Mad Trapper up in the northern Yukon. Hmm. And we filmed that in southern Alberta, in Canmore. So that was my first introduction. And there was like 7 dog teams in that movie. And my ex-husband's was one of them. And, you know, he always had really good leaders that he could maneuver around, because for the movies, they really are very demanding on the dog team. And then the director asked, or after we made that movie, and they were looking for one dog team for Never Cry Wolf, and his name was brought up as the better dog team to use, and they asked if he wanted to be in it, and he said sure. And then when the director met us, we were doubling for an Inuit shaman in the movie, and I was the same height as the Inuit man that we were doubling for. And so he asked if I could drive the dog team, and I was still just learning at that time, but I said sure. So I did run the dogs, and it's a very short section of the movie right at the beginning. And that movie, Never Cry Wolf, is about a man that goes up north and lives with the wolves for a year and studies their behavior. And so he gets flown up in this bush plane and it lands on a lake out in the middle of nowhere with all his supplies for a year. And when the plane flies away, this is in the winter, that first night he hears what he thinks is wolves howling in the, and he gets scared and he hides underneath his canoe on the frozen lake. And then that's me that mushes up and takes him away back to my little encampment. So it's a very short section,
cool.
But it was great. We worked for them for 2 months, and Carol Ballard was the director, and he just was amazing to work with. He was really great.
Well, I can't wait to get it. Hopefully tomorrow I'll get to watch that. I should have got it beforehand. I apologize. Well, that is interesting.
Yeah, it's a good movie for sure.
So what do you do now? Obviously, you're doing this, and obviously all of us have dogs, and so we realize this is a year-round activity. To do it on your off times, do you guys have, you said you have a farmhouse there. What else do you do in the off times?
Well, we've been building a lot in the last few years. There's a over 100-year-old farmhouse here on the property, but then we built our own timber frame house. Our buildings are in 5-year programs, so it took us 5 years to build the house we live in now, and then another 5 years for this timber frame lodge, because we do a lot of the work ourselves, and that's in between when we're guiding. And in the summer, we guide canoe trips, so we're not totally off, but it's not as busy as in the winter. Well, about once a year, the last 6 or 7 years for my holiday, I've been taking horseback riding holidays, different places around the world. That's what my other passion is, horses, so I like to do that.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But it's really busy, as you know, having the dogs and running your own business, so.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't feel like we ever have much off time.
No, there's not off time, and if it is off time, you're paying somebody, you're having to have somebody come watch everything for you, so.
Yeah.
It's I know how that goes. Well, this has been absolutely fantastic. If people wanted to get a hold of you guys or hear more about the adventures, and by the way, I don't know if I told you that the reason why we called you and reached out to you is because we've had so many inquiries from around the United States of people wanting to find people like you. Find the different guides and the different guide services. And you came highly recommended by a number of different people from Alaska that they had heard about you guys. And I think there might have even – was there an article on you guys in Mushing Magazine many years ago?
Yes. Yep, there was. Well, there's been a couple over the years, but yes. I think, one thing that makes us a little different than other businesses is either Kevin or myself, one of us, you know, being the owners, is on one of the trips. We don't send people out on trips without one of us there. And also, all of our dogs we've raised ourselves. It's our own breeding. So we have a really close relationship with our dogs, and we also keep them till they die. So we have a retirement community, which is a huge commitment.
Oh, it is.
And we have a daylight basement where they can get in and out without having to go upstairs and got a cement floor, but, you know, they each have their own little bed. So that's a huge commitment. We have usually five or six, it seems like, at one time.
Did we hear them a little earlier? I thought
yeah,
I heard
they were howling.
Yeah.
And we also built these pastures. We have 3 one-acre pastures. So when we're not running the dogs in the winter on the off season, they can run for like hours and hours. We put out anywhere from 2 to 6 at a time in the morning, and then we switch them midday. So it's a huge commitment how we've chosen to have dogs. So I would encourage any mushers to take the time to do that, because they're just so much happier when they get to run.
So with that, you have a fence, obviously, to hold them in?
We put up fencing, which was a lot of work, but, you know, it's so nice, and they can just run and run and run. I mean, our dogs aren't the type that dig out under the fence. You know, we have a couple that, you know, we have to watch, but, yeah, they're like an acre. Each pasture is an acre, so.
Oh, that's
great. It's really nice. It's really reduced digging holes in our dog yard and, you know, the boredom that the dogs go through in the off season.
Oh, I can imagine. And they obviously get along well enough that you can do that, obviously.
Well, there's certain ones that don't. So we have, you know, rotations that we keep, you know, we have to keep some separate from others. But between all our dogs, there's lots of combinations that can go out because so many, they're related, a lot of them, and there's a family, you know, the mom and her pups. And
right. So if people want to get a hold of you, it's, I'm going to try this again, Mahousik, M-A-H-O-O-S-U-C.
Yeah, S-U-C, yeah.
So that's just at www.mahousik.com, correct?
Right.
And that's M-A-H-O-O-S-U-C. I'll get that right one of these days.
Yes.
My Native American is pretty weak, I guess.
Oh, that's all right.
And if they want to call you, do you guys have a number that they can call you at?
Yeah, it's 207-824-2073.
Wonderful. And I'll put it also in the show notes for anybody that's away or driving. Don't get in an accident trying to write that down. And
yeah,
if people want to book with you, are you guys pretty booked far ahead of time? Is it something that they can usually get pretty open schedules? Or
so people start booking anytime, you know, usually in the fall with the early birds. I mean, we have people asking for 2009 now, but we don't think that far ahead. You know, we're getting calls every day for people are booking trips. So some are full and others, there's still room. So it's, you know, Christmas week always books up really quickly and February vacation. You know, there's still room left, but it's always good to call ahead. The sooner you know, the better.
Oh, I absolutely. My wife and I, when we were looking at this, she was so bummed that she couldn't be on the interview today because we so want to come out and visit you guys.
Yeah, I liked hearing how you two interview together. That's great.
Oh, we just love it. And you guys are so wonderful to let us interview you. And let Kevin know to thank you for giving your time and that big nor'easter that you guys are supposed to be getting. I hope you get just enough snow, not too much.
Yeah, it's starting to snow now. One other thing I don't know if you want to mention, but it would be good for us to mention, is there are lodge and farmhouse have their own website of MahousikMountainLodge.com, just for people to realize there's somewhere they can come in this area and stay.
Oh, fantastic.
That would be helpful to get the word out to that as well.
And is that like a weekly kind of a stay or just a nightly?
It could be anything. We're actually starting to... A whole new venture. We're hosting events like family reunions and parties, and, you know, if people want to do a retreat here or whatever, like that's how we're filling up our time in the off season, I guess, to, you know, supplement the income. Plus, it's absolutely beautiful, the craftsmanship in there, and it's just a great place to have a gathering. So,
and that's Mahousik Mountain Lodge.
Yes, .com.
.com. Wonderful. Well, Polly, thank you so much.
All right, well, thanks for calling me.
Thank you, Polly, for that interview. I think it was pretty interesting about not only the guide service, but also the lifestyle, being able to provide summer and winter guide service guide service tours, being able to go out.
Yeah,
just
great.
Go out and experience it.
I wish I could just ship you. I know you'd love it.
I know, I would. I know.
And didn't Tim do a great job on that interview?
Well,
I was playing hooky that day, so he had to hold down the fort all by himself.
Yes, it taught her a lesson, though. She's not going to miss tomorrow, so she'll
oh,
be
I'm not missing tomorrow because I'm not going to tell you what it is.
I know. We're pretty excited. So, hey, thank you so much for everybody, and listen to Dr. Tim's vet tip coming up.
Okay. One other thing with parasite control with animals is just topical things that can bother our sled dogs. I really have never run across tick or flea problems with dogs, but two things I will run across will be fly bites and lice. Fly bites have always been the big plague of kennels. The flies like to nail the tips of the dog's ears, and people fight with them with all sorts of things. I've seen people use tar to that pink goop to taping them with duct tape for that matter. And by far the best thing I've ever come across is just to use that once-a-month flea preventative that you can buy from a drugstore or Kmart for that matter that either has a pyrethrin or a permethrin in it, and just use two or three drops to the tip area of the dog's ears, and then you'll have no fly bites for about 3 to 4 weeks. And that's what we use, and we maybe apply that to our dog's ears for, oh, 3 or 4 times a year, and that gets us through the summer, and we've never had a fly bite since then, any issues that way. So you can apply it right to the lesion, you can apply it to the hair, to the skin, but just two or three drops to the tips of the ears, and then you'll never have fly problems again. And that, to me, is just huge. Secondly, with lice, I've always come across some surprising cases of lice, even when I bought a dog from kennels that I thought were good and clean, and they were good and clean, but you get the dog in and they might have some lice issues. They're very simple to take care of. You have an itchy dog and you'll look underneath their arms or on the puppy's arms and you might find that there are some creepy white things going down. Now, with treating lice either on the puppies or the mom, these are going to be the typical presentations, are either puppies, the birthing mother, or old dogs, old sled dogs. They're very easy to take care of. Usually just a good flea shampoo that's approved for that age of dogs. So if you have little tiny puppies, you have to just find something that's okay for 3 or 4 weeks or older, and then bathe them roughly once a week. The adult dogs, I would tend to bathe them too, but oral ivermectin will take care of the lice as well, and then clean the bedding. The lice that dogs get are not transferable to us, so that's one good thing, but they are gross, but they're very, very simple to treat. So just good flea shampoo and cleaning the bedding and ivermectin for the older dogs will take care of it.
Hey, well, thank you, Dr. Tim, for that, and we look forward to all of you guys again. Don't forget to go out through the Amazon link to help us support the webpage. Also, keep writing us. Give us some comments and or write us at sleddog@vbs20.com. Again, that's sleddog@vbs20.com. But we'd love to hear from you guys. Keep giving us some ideas. If you know somebody that we should interview, we would love to reach out to them if they're up for it. Thank you, Greg Sellington, he's looking for some folks for us. Thank you, Leslie, for helping us. And we'll keep it going.
Be blessed now.
Bye-bye.